Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. Happy holidays, everyone. It's such a special time of year, and I'm so grateful to all of you for choosing to spend some of it with us here at Focus Forward. Don't forget to check out Beyond BookSmart's New Year's discount on our new monthly coaching subscription, which offers two of our 45-minute one-on-one coaching sessions per month for a more accessible price of $252. You have the choice to add more sessions if you need additional support. You can find out more information in the show notes or by going to our website, beyondbooksmart.com. Still have questions? You can shoot me an email at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com and I can help you out. And don't forget to act fast because this offer ends on January 5th, 2025. So parenting, much like coaching, is a journey full of questions and challenges and so many opportunities for growth, both for our children and ourselves. So how do we guide without pushing and encourage independence while simultaneously offering support and foster resilience that our kids really need in this world full of pressures? Oof, I don't know about you, but it's a lot to think about and a lot to do. And so today I am joined by Neil Elliott, who is a parent and a veteran coach at Beyond BookSmart, who has been coaching since our company's inception in 2006 and whose wisdom has shaped countless lives. I asked Neil to join me to share three stories about his coaching. The stories he chose highlight the importance of trust, finding relevance in learning, and meaningful parent-child relationships. You'll hear about a student who improved his algebra skills by connecting math to Minecraft, a long-term client who rebuilt confidence through trust, and a special in-person coaching moment from our pre-virtual coaching days. Neil's stories inspired our conversation and led us to talk about building trust, encouraging progress, even those tiny steps, and reframing failure as a vital learning opportunity. Whether you're navigating those teen years or guiding a younger child, I really hope Neil's stories and wisdom will inspire reflection and offer some support for the road ahead. And be sure to check out the show notes for Neil's curated collection of books and other resources he wants to share with Focus Forward listeners. Neil knows what he's talking about, people, and he has created a treasure trove. Okay, let's get on with the show.
First, just a quick little insert, Hannah.
Yeah,
I believe that my learning and my continued learning comes from all the mistakes that I make. Mm. So as you put me up on the pedestal as an expert, I just want to remind you and remind our listeners that what I think works and is wise for us as parents comes from decades of making mistakes.
Yeah. So I was teaching a class last night. I teach embroidery and sewing, and I was teaching a class last night, and there was a woman there who said that she was really intimidated by people who knew how to knit. She sees these people on the subway knitting and they don't even think about it. They just knit and knit. And so she's like, I could never do that. And I said to them, well, what you didn't get to see is all the years that it took them to get to that place, right? You didn't see them cursing at the knitting needles because they made another mistake. You know, you didn't see them frogging an entire sweater because they knit it in the wrong gauge or whatever, you know? And so that's something that what you just said, like, we have to remember that you have gotten to where you are because of all the, you know, you called it mistakes, but because of all those opportunities you had to learn more. So,
yeah. And a mistake is, as the trite expression is, there are opportunities for learning. We take something back, we reflect and process it and try it again.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So what do you want to tell first?
Well, the first thing I want to talk about is the relationship between parents and their children in terms of work ethic. I believe strongly that schools are responsible for teaching content, for teaching the skills of the discipline, and parents are responsible for encouraging a work ethic. Mm. And that work ethic may be a vision that parents have that are different from, or caregivers have that are different from each other if there's a partnership, and they're often different than what their children have. And so what do we do? And when there's friction, and encouraging a work ethic. And so this story that I want to share is about two parents who I came to when their child was an eighth grader. He had a backpack that was in the spring of eighth grade. He had a backpack that was overstuffed with nothing filed, zero system. His parents were concerned that he really spent very little time doing homework. And going into ninth grade, they wanted some help with him changing his work ethic. About 4 weeks into our coaching relationship, he shared with me that he really was not doing well in algebra. He had a D average. And we looked at the work he was doing, and he was doing algebraic expressions, 2D plus 6 minus 3D plus 7 equals. And I came to find out quickly that it wasn't that he couldn't do it. He had little to no interest in it. So at the same time that I was learning this, I happened to glance up at the wall next to his desk. I said, what is that up there? And he said, oh, that's just some trigonometry stuff I'm doing. And I said, just some
Just,
trigonometry,
yeah, just
just. I
casually.
said, so you want to tell me a little bit about why you're doing that? He said, yeah. Do you know about Minecraft? And I said, yeah, I know a little. He said, well, you know, everything is they're blocks. And I said, He said, well, I'm trying to make them into curves. And you have to know trigonometry to program Minecraft in order to make them into curves. I said, oh, he said, would you like to see some of what I'm doing? I said, sure. So he gets on his keyboard and up pops an amusement park.
Wow.
And the amusement park has a fountain in the front, just like as if you went to Disney. You're greeted with a huge garden and a fountain. Well, to make a fountain spray with curves, you have to know trigonometry. He said, but wait. And then he moves me over to another part of the screen, and a pole starts to come up out of the ground, and it goes out, telescoping, goes up and up and up. And then there's a merry-go-round of swings on the top.
Nice.
He says, yeah, so that's what I'm working on. It's one of
That's
my projects. I said, oh. He said, when I'm doing Minecraft, you know how you chat at the bottom with other people who are doing it? I said, yeah. So I've found myself chatting with somebody who was really interested in why I want to program curves and how I'm starting to do that. And he said he was the systems analyst at Pixar. And he wondered if I would like to come out and spend a week with my family, this summer between ninth grade and 10th grade. I said, wow. And what about Algebra One? Mike, do you see any relevance for Algebra One connecting with some of the trigonometric calculations that you need to make? He said, yeah. I said, well, maybe you want to get better at Algebra One. And he said, yeah, I guess so. He would be up until 2 in the morning doing his trigonometry. He had a notebook. He sat with his father night after night. His father, a software engineer and programmer at MIT. And he was learning how to program and learning how to program with trigonometric
That's
commands
really
into
cool.
the coding to do. And he would not wake up in time for school the next morning. And parents were really furious and had to drive him to school. And as the year progressed, we started to talk about priorities and what really mattered. And it came out that he has no friends. He's very shy. He spends all his time at the computer. When he's not doing that, he spends all his time at his huge, huge drum set, which he played for me early on in that ninth grade year. And I was really taken away. So as the year went on, we started to talk about, for you parents, how are you trying to come to make some sense and be at peace on what he doesn't do and with respect to what he is doing? And they said, we're working on that. I said, well, we'll keep working on that. Fast forward to later in the year, end of ninth grade, he was getting ready to go to Pixar with his parents. He had joined the ski team. He was starting to make some friends. Moving into 10th grade year, he became the captain of the ski team. He had two garage bands that were being asked to perform everywhere.
Nice.
And he was sailing away. And then the parents' priorities and expectations became really clear. If he gets B's or B minuses, we're fine with that. If we have to drive him to school, he's going to have to compensate us for our time because he has to know when is he going to stop in the wee hours of the morning. He agreed. He said to me, I'm aiming for B minuses for the rest of my high school career. I've got too many other things that are really important to me. We had lunch many times in his senior year and in the summer after, as he was going off to, I think, Rochester Institute of Technology for computer work and programming.
Cool. That's great. Yeah, that learning, those learning, both learning how to prioritize and also learning that even if you are a teenager, you can have priorities that can be, very important to other, like you have to learn how to meet the expectations of the adults in your life because there are expectations that you have to meet just as part of a family. And that it's that you can that your values are important as well. Like his priorities are important. And I feel like you have to talk about it and you have to bring them out and you have to see where they fit into things. And that's a skill.
Yes, it's a skill, and it requires practice, and it requires openness and flexibility and willingness to shift perspectives as parents and shift perspectives caretakers and shift perspectives as the student, and understand where's the sweet spot of meeting the needs that I have and meeting the expectations that my parents have. Taking perspectives and shifting is not an easy task. One of my sons in college wasn't going to go off to Spain or some other place in Europe for his year away. He wanted to go to Argentina with some program I had never heard of, the Knowles program, and he wanted to do hiking in Patagonia and kayaking. And I said, really? And he said, Dad, do you know anything about the Knowles program? I said, no. He said, well, I think it would be fair to you and fair to me if you did some research. I did. I found out that most of the astronauts in NASA, when they were younger, had been in the Knowles program, where they're leading about character, de learning about character development and leadership and problem solving and survival. And so the next conversation with my son was, I congratulate you on picking something that is unusual, and pursuing your college to change their perspective to award you academic credit, which they had said they're not going to do for your semester abroad in Patagonia. And he made it all work out.
That's cool. Yeah, right. We have to give them the chance. We have, and it can be hard as parents. I think I remember I was talking with Ellen Galinsky, and she was saying that so often we forget that we were that age once, and we forget that they don't have the knowledge and experience that we've gone through in our lives, but they do still have opinions and their own experience and their own needs and desires and dreams and plans. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we're worried.
Yeah,
We're worried
right.
in this day
Yeah,
and age,
of
how are they going to
course.
make a living and survive?
Yeah,
And
yeah.
what kinds of things do they need to do to stay on the straight and narrow and do the traditional expectations? And
Yeah.
we worry. And so we need to talk about that worry. And it's okay, I think, for caretakers, parents to say to their children, honestly, I'm worried about this.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Yeah,
Tell
yeah.
me if you have a little bit of worry when you look further down the road and you're making a decision that you're making right now. And
Yeah.
it's those honest kinds of conversations that do more than build a work ethic. They build a relationship that's a lifelong relationship of being able to think about prioritizing and cost benefits, and it builds a foundation of trust for our children to be able to come back to us and to say, you know, I'm worried
Yeah.
about this, and I'm wondering if you can, you know, what's your opinion? Can you give me some
Yeah.
advice on this?
Yeah. Yeah, I love what you were saying. It was all questions. It was all questions that we can ask, which really encourages our students and our children to think for themselves. We're not telling them what to think or what to feel. We're asking them, what do you think
Yeah.
about this? What can you do about this?
Oh, yeah. The book entitled The Book of Beautiful Questions is a book I can't recommend strongly enough. It's not an easy read, but there's wonderful sections, and you just go into it and questions to look at how you manage in the workplace, or questions about building relationships. There's just, it's a terrific book, and another time I can say more about it.
Yeah, I'll put a link to it in the show notes.
The previous story was about work ethic standards and expectations. This is about how, as caregivers and as parents, we can step back from the emotional drive that we have about seeing our children progress, and ask about, how do we notice? What are the markers that help us notice if our children are making progress? And sometimes it's in minute ways. So this client, who I began working with in fourth grade, he's now a freshman in college. I
Cool.
am still coaching.
Yeah, love it.
Some people say, you must not be that good. I mean, you need to work with him for the 11th year now. You know, what's going on? Or they might say, yeah, you've always kind of been kind of slow in how you explain stuff. So that must be why it's taken so much time. While both of those are true, there's something else, and it's about a deep respect that a very close-minded, anxious young man had as a fourth grader. He had an image of himself as being stupid. He was had difficult classroom experiences of seeing things in ways that didn't quite connect. You might say kind of a little bit on the spectrum. And one of his neuropsychs said he was on the spectrum, but when I met him for the first time, I didn't see that. I didn't see any of that. So I needed to come to know what was underlying this sense of not being intelligent. And even as a fourth and fifth grader, we talked about there's all kinds of intelligences.
Yeah.
You're great with numbers. Your sketching is fantastic. It's so clear and it's so precise. And we talked about all the things he was good at. And so we started building a relationship about the diversity of his intelligences. as we started to get into more and more work, and I would sit by his side in the days that we could do that, he would start doing some writing or do some calculation. And I would sometimes slip into the mode of saying, hey, wait a second, did you, you know, what about this? And, or you could do that. And he would put his hand up very clearly to my, near my face and say, stop. And it would be, wait, wait, wait.
Ah.
I would say, okay, I can do that.
Yeah.
I will wait.
Yeah.
And measuring progress, the markers of progress, over the next 9 years and to today, I have gotten so good at waiting. And he grew. And so he would say, wait, wait. And I would say, you know I'm going to wait. I have proven I can wait. You don't have to keep saying that. I'm just sitting here. And then he would say, after a year or two, he'd say, the waits became less frequent. There were fewer at the same time. They were less intense in volume. Those were markers.
Yeah.
I felt them. I saw them.
That's cool.
Is that he was starting to soften about considering. Hard to measure contemplation, but it seemed like I could measure that he was considering inviting me in. Because I would say, after he did it, maybe ripped up the work two times, and then the third time kind of worked, he'd say, so, what do you think? I said, well, what do you think? I think it's good enough. I think it gets the job done. And I said, it probably does. So, you know, I haven't been a fifth grade teacher, but I think it meets the standards of the assignment. And then over time, I would say, you know, I can help you make your work easier. This is not while he was working. It would be the reflection afterwards. And he'd say, okay. I said, I can maybe help you do it faster and not have to rip up three times. Just listen, expressionless. He had an ad and still has a fantastic poker face.
Poker face.
Unbelievable. As did his dad, and still does. And so really hard to read. And he learned from his dad a great poker face. I can make your work easier, maybe. I can make your work go faster. I can maybe make your work even a higher quality, help you be at a higher quality. Maybe all three at once. And it's your choice to decide when you're going to let me in, if at all. By ninth grade, he needed to prepare for midterms. He had the essay questions he would be asked for social studies. He had been practicing and going to Empower Architects for Writing for and learning the structure of pre-writing. And it was, but he didn't like it. But when it came to having to pre-write the essays where he could bring in his notes for the midterms, he used it. There was no wait, wait. And that December of ninth grade year, there were no waits. He would say something, he'd listen, we went back and forth, he'd write pages of a first draft. He started getting A's, and he reflects now on when he became a student and when he believed in himself, because he was an honor student in high school, mostly A's and some B's, and he did it himself. On his terms, sometimes even perfectionistic. He would call me middle of the day, Saturday, and say, can we meet tonight? I want to read my essay with you before I submit it. And he grew, and he grew because of trust, of being respected for his multiple intelligences. He grew because I could point out to him that you're growing, not just in your academic skills, but you're growing in your self-regulation. You're growing in letting other people in. You're growing in your confidence and trust of being saying, what do you think of this? I said, these are the lifelong skills. It's not about the reading, the writing, the calculations.
Yeah. And I that's such a beautiful story because or in many ways, but one thing I really love about it is that you, well, two things I really love is you gave him space to be himself and you showed him how to celebrate himself and to see the things that he obviously was having challenges seeing. And you know how they talk about if you're going to praise someone, you should give really specific praise and not just say, oh, you're such a great person, because they and might in their head say, no, I'm not. But if you give this specific praise, like, look, I noticed that you used to do this and now you do it this way, you know, that's growth. That you can't deny that. You can't say, no, I didn't, because there's evidence that you did.
Exactly. And being able to do that really takes practice. It takes practice in what you're looking at. And it takes practice in the words you choose. As caregivers, the more we can practice being clear, being specific,
Specific, yeah.
being honoring, trusting, and building the foundation of noticing, and that's the foundation that's needed for parents to be able to let in to be a coach in any way, shape, or form. And I don't think parents can be coaches. I think they can be consultants. With questions, and where are you trying to get to? And how's that going? And have you considered any adjustments? And what might you do differently? And are you considering trying to do this differently? And instead of asking for what's due and when it's due, or what did you get on that last test the other day, to ask, how are you feeling about your work right now? How clear are you about being organized? And being planful. How do you feel about meeting your due dates?
Yeah, and it's hard to hold back as parents and just ask the questions instead of saying, why don't you? Is it because from our perspective, sometimes it's so clear, like I know exactly what you need to do to be successful in this, but that's from our perspective. It's not their perspective.
Yeah, and so many parents that I've worked with said, you know, I'm starting to come to the belief that they need to fail now.
It's a good
Their
time to fail.
first half of their freshman year, their senior year in high school, and I'm really worried about their going off to college, and I think we need to let them fall on their face now rather than because, they're distracted. They've got so many things. They've got their license. They have their first girlfriend. They're not doing some of the things that they're not doing theater, which has stood them in such good stead, and they've been stars for years. And instead, they want to put their energy into music right now. And mom and dad are in different places about what they should be doing. And that should is such a loaded word. And,
It's a four-letter word.
A lot of meeting with the parents of this particular student, which is a whole story in itself, differently than was about helping them to learn to be consultants and calling a family meeting and having that family meeting over dessert or a walk and really just having a safe place, space, opportunity to get to know each other about the conflict. And it's okay to say, as caregivers, as parents, I'm worried that if you do this or don't do that, it could result in this or that. And then look at some of the great tools that we practice with Beyond Book Smart with cost-benefit analysis. And I've been in so many of these consultations with parents of helping them learn to stay in their role as a consultant, to stay with the questions, to be disciplined, to allow their child to speak, and then come to a collaborative decision that everybody is good with. And it's beautiful. That's why I keep doing this. It's what I can't do with my own kids. We touch on it sometimes. There are
Yeah,
moments,
there are moments.
but they have their own coaches. They have their own coaches. And sometimes they give us their mom and dad permission to talk with their coaches. Only one way sometimes to feed information to the coach or the therapist about things that are happening in their life that they might want to know, while it's clear that there'll be no feedback coming about in the other direction, but we're just being thanked for sharing information that might be shared. And they give us permission to do that. Sometimes they don't. We have to live with that.
And that goes back to that, the building that trust, and how it is so hard to do that, and it is so important to do that as best you can, because they like you said, they will come back, and they will, they will see us as someone, oh, I can trust this person.
I love your expression to come back, to stay open-minded. And they come back if there's a sense of respect and trust and caring and understanding and love. And another one of my most famous, celebrated and enjoyable books is Eric Fromm, The Art of Loving. And he said, loving is a verb and it has four parts. The first part is being aware, listening, understanding, deep listening. And we can talk about deep listening as opposed to surface listening, but another time. Aware, being aware. The second part is respecting, giving feedback and acknowledgement that while I may not agree with you in what you believe or what you're choosing to do, I respect that you really believe sincerely that it's the right thing for you right now. The third part is to show caring and that I'm here with you. I'm by your side. I'll support you in any way that I can, as long as I feel that you're taking good care of yourself. And the fourth part is that I will be responsible as your parent to continue to do that, as long as you continue to be responsible for sharing and engaging in this conversation. So understanding, caring, respect, and responsibility, and doing those four things in our relationships with anybody, especially with our children, that creates the foundation for they will come back. They may not stay in touch as much as we would like them to, but they'll still stay in touch. I do a lot of Tai Chi and yoga, and becoming grounded as both caregivers, parents, and children, being calm and soft, that's the beginning of being able to be flexible and open-minded and shifting. And the next part is being asking yourself, am I centered? Am I grounded? Am I calm and I'm soft? Am I centered? Am I grounded? Am I light and am I lively? And am I whole and am I total? Am I whole and total? And being able to say those words and having an intention and that it reverberates through your whole being, your whole body. And I know this is not a, going, a little bit of a departure from executive functioning, but I don't think it's a big departure.
And no, I don't
Because
think it
it's not
is.
just the brain. The brain has to be connected to our whole being.
And we need to be calm and centered and grounded and connected with ourselves if we're going to use our executive function skills. So I think, that self-regulation piece, that is what that is, right? It's self-regulation. It is.
And
It's
coupled with
critical.
self-awareness and
Yeah.
coupled, yeah,
Yeah,
with
it's critical.
self-reflection and self and honesty allows us to continue to grow and change. And if caregivers and parents can model that, which I believe is their job, besides, are you up to date?
And I think what is so difficult, at least for me personally, and what I see in other people, is that when we ask those questions of ourselves, like, are we being in touch, and also loving ourselves, like those four things that you mentioned, right? We need to love ourselves as well. That doing that kind of work and asking those kind of questions is hard, and it can often be very uncomfortable, whether you're asking yourself those questions or you're asking another person, or you're connecting with yourself and having that respect with yourself and that openness with yourself and questioning yourself, or if you're having that conversation with another person, it is so difficult and that work is so hard. And I think that is why we so often want to avoid it, because it's so difficult and it can hurt, or it can expose us in ways that we feel too vulnerable. And so that's where that trust comes back, right? And like, do you have a person that you can explore that with? Maybe it's a therapist, or maybe it's your partner, or maybe it's your coach. But then that's where you are so able to grow and become more grounded and become more centered. And then you can really work on that self-awareness and that reflection. And that's where that growth happens. That's where, like, oh, things become brighter and like, oh, now I see why I do this. And like, I just briefly had a conversation with my husband last night, and that conversation was so difficult for me because I had to admit some stuff that I really struggle with internally. But then after the conversation, I just felt so much lighter and so much freer.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
in the moment, it was awful. And after still, I feel so much better. And so it's hard to get yourself to that place. And it's easier when you understand and you have someone that you can trust.
And trust doesn't just happen.
No.
As you know, it's a process and it builds.
And it's not too late. If you feel like your kids can't trust you, if you feel like you can't trust your kids or your whatever, it's not too late. That is something I believe that can really be built. And a lot of that repair can happen. And it's also difficult, but there's so much repair that can be done.
I celebrated the passing of one of my uncles last month, and he lived a wonderful life, and he was a tough guy. He grew up with polio starting at the age of 3, and he had very high expectations, very talented with his voice, with radio. And he became a very, very famous nationwide radio broadcaster, cool. An ambassador. Went in the days when it was the Soviet Union with an Iron Curtain. He was an ambassador to share what American AM radio was doing.
That's so cool.
And a spectacular uncle, not a spectacular father for two of his children. And in the last 2 weeks of his life, all 5 of his children were by his bedside. And his first wife, whom he was divorced from, was by his bedside. And he was able to communicate a little bit.
Mm.
And they all made peace. Because he was hard on them. He was a drill sergeant, because that's what he knew. And they all became very successful in their lives because, in large part, of what he instilled as their work ethic.
Yeah, right.
But he didn't instill a lot of peace and trust.
Yeah.
And but they came back because they knew and they appreciated what he was trying to do and where he came from.
Yeah.
I think modeling all the things that you were saying, Hannah, and the difficult conversation last night with your husband, to the extent that we can model and share with our children, the things that we're working on, how we're growing, the mistakes we're learning from, how we want to keep learning and growing and changing and developing, that is so powerful. So when I can say to my children, I am worried about something that's happening. I'm worried about how I'm taking care of myself right now. My back has been really bad and I'm worried that I may overdo. And I'm asking for my care team to tell me, you have permission to tell me, I don't think you should be doing that. I more than consultants. Be very clear, because I may not be seeing it honestly. So be honest with myself.
Right.
So the more we can model that and give them agency to give back to us as their aging parents. That Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young song, "Teach your children well," and then it evolves into "Teach your parents well." Yeah, I listen to that song a lot these
Yeah, it's a
days.
good one.
I have another story.
Yeah, let's hear it.
We have time.
Yeah, and then we'll go.
Okay. This is a story about what do we do when it's clear to us that our children are finding school work relatively meaningless at the very least, or it is depressing them because they are so dragged down with it and they're not finding joy. So this is a story that is on our website called The Garden Walk. And it's a story about beauty versus depression. And it's a story about how we can help to motivate our children. I'm meeting with a client. He's a ninth grader. He's reading W Lord of the Flies, or not reading Lord of the Flies, because he said to me, "Why do they make us read depressing books one after another? Separate Piece, Catcher in the Rye, and now I have to read Lord of the Flies." And then he turned to me and said, "You know, I'm already depressed. I take medication for depression, and these books are making me more depressed. Why?" I didn't have words at that moment, but what I did know is that it was a beautiful Sunday, May morning, and before I walked into his house, there were lilacs in bloom right before I got to his front steps. And I said, "Jay, let's go outside." He said, "Why?" I said, "Let's just go outside." And I said, "Just stand still for a moment. Just listen." The birds were tweeting. It was a beautiful morning. Sky was clear blue. Sun was out, 70s. I said, "Hey, do you know what that bush is called?" He said, "No." I said, "That's a lilac bush. Have you ever smelt it?" He said, "No." I said, "Okay, come this way." So I took a big sniff of it,
One of the best smells.
and I said, "Would you like to try?" He said, "I can't." I said, "Why not?" He said, "There's too many bees around it." I said, "What if I clip a bud and bring it over to you?" He said, "Okay." So he took a smell and he said, "Oh my God." I said, "Okay, let's go back inside." I said, "So that's beautiful for me. I think you smelt some beauty. Look around this room. Look around this room and come back to me in a minute or two and tell me if you see anything in this room that was made by a human being that's beautiful." And he saw some gorgeous pottery that was on a shelf in the study that we were in. And he told me about it and what he loved about it. Anything else? So he named some other piece of art. And then I looked around the room in a way that I had never looked around the room. And I said, "There's a piano over there. Humans made that thing. Do you play the piano, Che?" He said, "Yes, I do." I said, "Would you play something for me?" And he went over to the piano and he played the most delightful rhapsody, kind of a Chopin, light and airy and warm. And I was almost in tears. My breath was taken away. And I said to him, "That was beautiful. Thank you." And I said, "Do you know anything about the person that wrote this book, Lord of the Flies?" And no. I said, "Okay. The author of this book, and you know, wrote this book shortly after World War II. And there was a lot of horrific stuff happening. And maybe he's looking for something, some way to deal with his depression. Maybe he's depressed from all that went on, and he needs to use the art of language to write a book to get it out and to send a message about evil and caring and relationships and standing up for yourself and beauty, maybe some beauty that might be in the world. And what you're being asked to do is to read this book. And he cut me off. He cut me off in mid-sentence and said, maybe I can identify with him as I read the book. Yeah, I said, maybe you can find some meaning. Maybe you can find something relevant in this book that will speak to you. And he said, okay, I'm going to read the book. And came back the next week. He had read the book. We were talking about beauty versus depression, ways that he could take another perspective when he was feeling down. Caregivers can do this. It's back to what we were talking about in the other stories. And it's about helping our children find relevance, find meaning, learn that problem solving isn't just about the math problem or the science hypothesis and experiment. It's about how do we think? How do we integrate thinking with our feelings? And what I'd like to say to students, what I said to Jay was, the world needs you to read this book, and the world needs you to make a commentary to yourself and to others about the importance of this book, because the world needs you to be the best version of yourself that you can be. But it needs our clients, our students, and our caregivers and parents need to know that it requires those conversations, those authentic conversations that we're talking about. And then we can help our children see more meaning and relevance to their job as a student.
It's so hard when you're in the moment, when you're in it so deeply, and it's just in your face and you can't really see anything else. It's so hard to find that meaning, especially when you're stressed out and you're so busy and you'd rather just, do something else. And
And there's five disconnected subjects going on at the same time. And it's not project-based learning. It's disintegration of learning. And I was a horrible calculus student. I was dreading going to class. And I went for extra help, and it didn't help.
I relate to that.
And then one day, somebody said, well, you're interested in sociology. You're interested in knowing about trends. You're interested in knowing how much is happening with gun violence or murders or whatever the issue was. I was working in the Boston public schools for 15 years, and I was going to more funerals than I was going to any other celebrations in my life of our students killing each other. And it was dreadful. And I started to do a study and found out that in the 15 years that I was the principal of the school, the violent crime rate in Boston had increased 10 times from 1978 to 1993. Violent crime in Boston had gone up 10 times. If I was a student studying this, I would have seen a curve. But I wouldn't have really known how much is under the curve. If I knew a little bit about calculus and I could plug it into a little bit of an equation, I could find out how much was under the curve. I could find out the rate that the curve changed. I would have a tool to make sense of stuff that mattered in my life. And nobody ever said that's how you use it. That's one of the ways that you use it. You find the rate of change, or you find out how much is in a certain interval in the change, or what the rate of the interval changes, and you can integrate and you can differentiate, and well, that was all just a bunch of words and bull for me. But if it's attached to something relevant, and as caregivers, again, we can be creative and thoughtful because we've lived longer and had more experiences of how to help them integrate something in social studies with something in science, with something in math. We can suggest it, and they may not get it in school, but we can help fuel the fires of learning. And that's beautiful.
I have two people, my daughter and my client. A client of mine is a junior in college, and my daughter is a sophomore in high school. So she's taking stats right now. She loves math. She's taking stats, and she loves it because she's doing like real stuff with the math. You know, she's like really using it. She's not just learning how to do these things, but she's there's meaning. It's there's meaning. And then my junior, he is a meteorological atmospheric science student, and he said this is the first time that he's actually used the math that he's learned, all these really hard things, but they're actually using them for weather now. And he said it's so much more interesting. He's so much more engaged. He's getting a better grade. The class is easier for him because it makes there's meaning. There's meaning.
And I don't want to go too far off the subject of the coaching relationship, but we can keep in mind as caregivers and parents that we can have conferences with teachers because they're probably still getting the question that was asked 50 years ago, why do we need to know this? To this day, clients that I work with in eighth grade are learning the quadratic equation, and they don't really know why. And in 10th grade, they're taught it again. And I say to them in 10th grade, why do you think you're learning this again? I don't know. Can you
I
name cite the quadratic equation?
I did terribly in math.
I think it's plus or minus b times the square root of b squared minus 4ac over 2a.
That sounds familiar.
So what? Have you ever used it in your life?
Don't think so.
And yet they're still teaching it in eighth grade and then again in 10th grade. They're teaching, does the curve turn? You can use these calculations tools to know where the vertex is, or whether the asymptote is, or whether the curve is turning up or turning down in the parabola. So what?
So what? Okay.
But the parents can make a so what, and the parents can talk to teachers that it is easy. Please, for the sake of my children, can you please introduce a little so
A
what
little
in
so
the
what?
class?
I love it. There
We're
is hope.
learning.
Yes, we
We're
are learning.
learning in the education system and in our wonderful coaching science, how to learn from our mistakes and do it better.
And that's our show for today. It's also the last show for 2024. Thank you so much for being here this past year. We dropped 21 episodes that we're super proud of, and we have a lot more planned for next year. We'll be back on January 8th for our first episode of 2025 with a super special guest I'm super excited to share with you. I got to sit down with Instagram super popular Tidy Dad, Tyler Moore, who will share his own wisdom and smart ideas for tidying both your mind and your home. I hope you get a chance to listen. And as always, if you have questions or topic suggestions, I would love to hear from you. And you can find me at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. It helps us out a ton if you can rate us on Apple or Spotify. And even better, we can leave a written review on Apple so more people can find us. You can follow and even set up auto downloads of Focus Forward on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Sign up for our subscriber email at beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. Thank you, Neil Elliott, for joining me on the show. And thanks to you for listening. Happy New Year.